This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I'm Evan Lazar, and today I am joined by a special guest host. Yeah, let's call you a guest host. It's Alex Barth. We've been waiting to do this for a very long time.
It's
like 2 years in running, basically, of trying to get you on this podcast.
It's just fun.
Busy fucking guy.
For once. Oh, we can swear on this?
Yeah, I can swear on this.
It's just nice that for once, you know, you have to do all the housekeeping and the ad reads and the ins and the outs. I just get to sit back and enjoy and talk football. It's a nice little change of pace. Once a century. It's like the Haley's Comet of podcasts.
He's literally sitting here with his feet kicked up, just relaxed as can be. This is not the usual Alex Barth. Usually I see a different side of him, Mr. More Prepared over there, but he looks prepared to talk about football.
Always.
That's for sure. But before we do, we got to shout out our friends at betonline.ag. The football season is in full swing. Get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, betonline.ag. Sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit to start betting college or professional ball. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, or tease your way through the season. You can bet on wild proposition bets. Well, the Dolphins did win a game. They won two games, actually, so you can't bet on that anymore.
Yeah.
Will the Bengals win a game?
No.
Let's go with that.
No.
That's the bet you can make. Get the fastest to market odds, updates, and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, betonline.ag. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And now that we got that out of the way, Alex, we got to talk some Patriots-Eagles.
Yeah. I mean, the game 2 years in the making, right? I guess you could say.
Right.
Did you just kind of skip last year's preseason game, I'm more than fine doing?
That preseason game, though, if you remember correctly, there was some heat there for the Patriots.
Yeah.
They had a little bit of extra in that game. I remember Brian Flores was dialing up a bunch of zero blitzes at the Eagles, and they really wanted to win that game. So you know that this one is going to be even more, you know, dramatic.
So it's funny. What I remember from that is Belichick's first press conference the week of that Eagles game. First question, Bill, you just lost these guys in the Super Bowl 6 months ago. I know it's preseason game. Is there any extra? And he goes, no, we're focused on us. It's the preseason, more internal than external. And that, like, he totally shut it down.
Yeah.
The next week, they were playing the Panthers.
Yeah.
I think that was the third preseason. I think the Eagles were second, Panthers were the third. And Bill comes to the podium, and in his opening statement, he just goes, yeah, so, you know, these guys, they beat us down in Carolina, or they beat us here last year. And, like, he goes on and on about the game against the Panthers last year and how much that had mattered, or 2 years before, or 3 years before, or whenever it was. So that was kind of my first experience dealing with Belichick daily. I always found that one funny. But, yeah, no, this one means something. This one means a little something more.
It's got a little bit of juice, and it's in Philadelphia, so I do think this is a difficult game on paper, at least, for the Patriots. But I want to talk a little bit about that Super Bowl, because Belichick this morning did acknowledge the fact that there is some relevance to that game. And he made it pretty clear, I think, that the coaching staff and maybe even the players watched that game in some capacity. I don't know if they watched the whole game back, but they watched some key moments, some key plays, some things that he thinks are going to come back up. He then said, you know, had a couple of questions this morning just about what has changed for Philadelphia. Obviously, the quarterback has changed is probably the biggest one. But schematically, offensively and defensively, still Jim Schwartz running the defense. This is still the same scheme. Belichick said it was the same scheme that he's been running for four different teams for 20 years. It's also still the same scheme on offense with Doug Peterson. So how much relevance does that game hold for you?
I think it holds a decent amount. The interesting thing, so you mentioned on the defensive side of the ball that it's the same scheme, but Belichick mentioned that part of that scheme is they like to change things up.
Yeah.
And they like to vary how much they pressure in different games. So I think to me where it matters the most is the running game, because that's where the Eagles are still the most similar up front defensively.
Yeah.
And the Patriots have struggled to run the ball this year. So I think they got to look at some of the way, and the Patriots are a different running team now than they were then. They attack, and they had a fullback then. They don't now. I think that's the biggest. So I think to go back and look at how the Eagles defended the run in that game, and the Patriots didn't run much. And I think some of that was inability to, I think some of it was game plan, but some of it was inability to. And to go back and look at how the Eagles defended the run in that game, that is, to me, I mean, they'll look at all of it, obviously, but that if, you know, if I'm going through it and I'm looking for the change, that's the biggest takeaway to me.
Yeah, I think on the other side of the ball, though, the biggest thing to me is that if you look at this scheme, this Doug Peterson, Andy Reid scheme. Yep. Over the last couple of years, including the Super Bowl, including some matchups with Kansas City, the Patriots have gotten kind of rocked defensively by this scheme. I mean, Kansas City's put up 40-plus in two games last year. They gave up 41 in the Super Bowl. It's a scheme that has given the Patriots problems, and I think the uniqueness of it is that it's really a West Coast base. The fundamentals of it is West Coast, right? Because that's right. where Reed's background is, and of course that in turn is where Peterson's background is. But they've now added these college air raid elements with the RPOs and the mesh concepts and four verticals and stuff like that, and they have an extremely athletic offensive line.
Yes.
Jason Kelce, their center, is really kind of the poster child of that athleticism, but you watch this offensive line on tape and they just move really, really fast. And it's not necessarily, they can blow guys off the ball. It's not that they don't have any power whatsoever, but I would say it's more about footwork and foot speed and the ability to get to guys and turn guys. They can get to guys with the center at the second and third level. Yeah. It's got the center getting up on safeties sometimes in some of these blocking schemes. So that's going to be difficult for them. But I think that the biggest thing is in the passing game is that this West Coast college scheme, as Mike Lombardi always calls it, it's difficult to defend because it is basically two schemes merged together that both right. have a lot of different elements, a lot of different success to them.
And I would think, you know, we talked going into the Ravens, and granted we weren't right about this, but we talked going into the Ravens about how the Patriots were going to need their size to win that game, right?
Yeah.
And again, that didn't end up working out, but this is a game where I look at it and say, okay, how much speed can you get on the field at once? Because
yeah.
even against the run, like, Jordan Howard's going to be a little bit of a wrecking ball, and that's fine. But, you know, you have guys like Dont'a Hightower on the field who can handle that. But they're quick everywhere. You talked about the offensive line. They're yeah. going to go throw guys like Miles.
Miles Sanders.
Miles Sanders, thank you.
Yeah.
They're going to throw guys like Miles Sanders at you, those quicker guys. DeSean Jackson won't be active, but that, you know, they got quick receivers. And you know, to go back to Jackson point, it's not just necessarily speed, but it's quickness.
Yeah.
And it's lateral quickness and the ability to move sideline to sideline, the ability to change direction quickly. So how quick can the Patriots get on defense, I think, is the key to countering this. And you look at guys like J.C. Jackson, maybe seeing at times him and Jason McCourty on the field at the same time, getting more corners on the field, where a guy who's more of a downhill guy like Landon Roberts, you know, like I said, you have Hightower out there to deal with the power running back. Outside of that, I don't know how big of a role a guy like Landon Roberts, a guy like Juwan Bentley, even a guy like Danny Shelton plays in this game, where I'd rather see the quicker guys, Lawrence Guy maybe as your defensive tackle, a guy yeah. who can move around a little bit better at linebacker, some more looks at you know, Kyle Van Noy obviously plays a lot, but he's a guy who I think could have a very big role in this defensive game plan. I'd throw Jamie Collins in there too. That's an obvious one. And on top of that, it's so important against the RPO. Guys who are disciplined, guys who know yeah. how to take away their gaps and hold their assignments. And if there's one guy on the, and there's a lot of them, but if there's one guy on this Patriots team this year I'm calling gap discipline, it is John Simon.
Yeah.
That dude is as disciplined and it like.
It was amazing how many times against Lamar he held the outside contain, right. and Lamar is just so fast that he ran
right.
through
and
the
it's,
angle.
There's only so much you can ask him to do. And that's
yeah.
the, and the Patriots have gotten by on these guys for so long. And I don't mean anything against John Simon when I say this. I don't. I think he's been great. But the Patriots have always had a handful of these guys on the roster when they're really at their best. That not the most talented,
yeah.
average to above average talent, but the football IQ and the mentality
right.
and the motor makes them an amazing player.
John Simon,
and John Simon fits that. I mean, I'm trying to yeah. think of other ones off the top of my head.
Right.
I mean, if you want to go back to a guy like Antoine Smith,
yeah.
was like that, certainly. You want to go way back. I think you certainly saw some of that in Mike Vrabel.
There's a lot of players like that on those early 2000s
right.
defenses. A guy like Ted Johnson,
yes.
for example, who
yes.
was a great run defender,
right.
always, right? And probably might have even been called an elite run defender.
Right.
But what those guys always understand to me, like John Simon, is they understand how they fit into the puzzle.
Right.
So they understand their role and they understand everybody else's roles around them. So they don't go outside of their framework. They're not going outside of their role to try to cover up for somebody else. They just play within the system, and the scheme is obviously excellent. So as long as they play within the scheme, then there's not going to be many leaks because the scheme is going to take care of itself, so
right.
to speak. I do want to talk about mesh, and I want to get to the RPOs too in a second.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about the mesh concept because this was the big concept that destroyed the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So basically what the Eagles have three variations, I would say, of mesh, where they're going to run crossing routes over the middle of the field, and their favorite one is to run that little spot route right in the middle of the defense, because you got the defenders kind of crossing over, and then the traffic all clears out, and there's just that tight end or that slot receiver sitting right in the middle of the thing. So if you remember the Corey Clement 55-yarder that we all try to forget, that was a mesh wheel, right?
It was not a touchdown, though.
That, it wasn't a touchdown.
It was not a touchdown.
But that was a mesh. No, not that one. It was the 55-yarder up the sideline that Marquise Flowers was defending him.
Late in the game?
It was earlier in the game. It wasn't the touchdown. But
Oh, yeah. Okay, yep. I got you. Yep.
So that play there, it was mesh over the middle, right? You had the crossing route. So mesh basically is two intersecting crossing routes at about 8 yards, let's call it, and then some sort of action around it to space the field, right? And they ran the wheel, and then they had one where they sent Nelson Aguilar just on a standard mesh, and he just caught it and had a nice catch and run, and Johnson Badamosi missed the tackle.
Remember that one, the infamous
Johnson Badamosi.
You didn't tell me this was going to be this painful.
Yeah, and then there was the third one was the fourth down conversion for Zach Ertz in the fourth quarter, where he just barely made it across the third down marker, the fourth down marker. And those three plays, I think you could argue, this Philly special, the Clement touchdown that you were talking about, the Alshon touchdown early on was certainly a big one. But those three plays were maybe the three of the 10 plays that were maybe the biggest plays of the game. And I think that all of those three plays are off the same concept. So the Patriots are obviously going to have to be ready for that concept. Now, one thing the Patriots have done, I put this on Twitter, that they've changed a little bit schematically their approach to defending mesh, where, again, especially in man coverage. So they have a man coverage check now, and they have, and they see a mesh concept where instead of following those guys with those man coverage guys just running with them, they actually have the safety in the middle of the field come down and cut one of the crossers, and then the corner that was on the guy in man coverage actually drops into like a robber position where the safety used to be. So they replace each other in the coverage. That way there you can't get picked off. You can't get put in a position where you're trailing because you have the safety coming down with leverage and coming down and cutting off that crosser. So that's probably what you're probably going to see a lot of one cross, which is what that coverage is called. And that's probably going to be where the Patriots start. Now I want to talk about the RPOs because that was a big problem. Although most of it, some of it was straight zone read with Baltimore, and it wasn't an RPO, but there was other elements of it that were RPOs. And Belichick talked about RPOs this morning at length, actually, about this Eagles offense. The Eagles offense, according to PFF right now, runs the second most RPOs in the entire NFL. First is the Kansas City Chiefs. So it's the same two guys, kind of pulling the trigger here. So they actually run the football 80% of the time on the RPO. So it's usually a run. But I think the biggest thing that you see with it is that they have a couple different variations. The backside slant RPO is the vintage one. That's the one that everybody uses.
Yep.
Where you have the running back and the offset wide receiver is running that little backside slant and the quarterback reads a hanger defender. The guy that you're talking about with John Simon, though, I think is really interesting. His role and the edges roles in this, because those are going to be the read players, right?
Right.
So those guys crash, he's going to run it around the corner. If those guys stay put, he's going to hand the ball off to the back. They're in a lot of just no-win scenarios in those situations, right? Because no matter what they do, the offense has an answer for it.
Right.
So I think really the biggest thing about the RPO is that you can't overdo it, and you gotta play your assignment. You have to play your assignment, because if your job is to contain on the edge, you can't crash down. You gotta contain on the edge, but therefore, you also need to rely on the guys in the interior to be able to do their thing,
right?
Because you're going to rely on those guys to now stop the run while you're containing on the edge. But the RPO, we see it all the time in college, but now it's kind of, it's a big part of the NFL now too.
And I think now that it's a part of the NFL, there's more out there on how to defend it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't want to oversimplify this too much, but without going into a whole long explanation, I think what the Patriots kind of need to ask themselves right now, and I'm sure they are, is where are they better off on that RPO? Are they better off when the Eagles hand the ball off? Are they better off when they throw the slant, or if they're running it with a bubble or whatever?
Yeah.
And you can go into it with that game plan of, if you read RPO, make them throw the backside. Or make them hand the ball off.
Yeah.
And then at the very least, if you know in those – I don't want to say the Patriots can dictate which way the RPO is going to go.
Yeah.
But if you go in with the mentality of, when we see this look, we want to force run – then you know when you get that look, odds are you're going to see run. Or he's going to make the wrong decision and force the throw to the backside and get a batted ball or whatever. So that's, again, an oversimplification of it.
No,
it's not that easy to stop
it. Think about it.
But now that part of the reason the RPO was so effective 2 years ago is it was very new.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't, I said this about Lamar Jackson all week last week. I'll bring it back. New always works in the NFL.
Yeah.
New almost always works. The only way to stop something is to see it repeatedly.
Yeah.
But once these things kind of get on tape and they become routine, you figure out more and more ways to stop it. It's the same reason. I go back to the Wildcat with this all the time. The Wildcat, remember, when it happened, was going to revolutionize football. Yeah. Some people were saying the quarterback position was going to be obsolete. Teams are just going to look for running backs who could throw. But, you know, it's out there for
What's
a year.
Lamar Jackson?
Exactly. It was Lamar Jackson. If Lamar Jackson had come along in the Wildcat era, there might not be any quarterbacks anymore. Like, I'm just saying. But my point being, it's out there for a year. Now, you know, when you see the Wildcat, it's rare. It's a gimmick, and it rarely works in the NFL. So the RPOs aren't there yet. And I don't know that they'll ever get there. I think this has more staying power. It's not quite as gimmicky as something like the Wildcat. But with so much there on it, the Patriots can go through and look and see, okay, what is the Eagles' success rate on an RPO when they run? What is it when they pass? And again, it's way more complicated than just those two. There's like seven or eight variables, but we'll look at it just those two for the sake of this conversation. And the Patriots say, all right, we want to play this more aggressively towards the run. We might not be able to force them to pass it every time.
Yeah.
We might, you know, we can't stop them from passing it on this play, but we don't want them running the ball successfully on the RPO. Whatever the opposite of that is, if that means they throw it a bunch, maybe that works and we have to adjust or not. But we think the best way for us to win this game is to deny the run on the RPO.
Yeah.
And again, there is some risk there because you're overcompensating towards one aspect of the game. But I wouldn't be I think that kind of has to be the discussion, not just for the Patriots, but league-wide as this becomes more precedent. You see the Chiefs struggling. I think other teams are looking at this. When you see the Chiefs run RPO, sometimes you see teams that just say, you know what? Run the ball.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Run the ball. We'll give you the edge. Run the ball. You're not putting this in the air.
Yeah.
And I think that is becoming the new status quo league-wide for how you defend the RPO. We'll see if that's what the Patriots go with. We might not even know if that's their mentality. We might just kind of have to figure it out from the tape. But that's kind of what I'm looking at for them.
And that's the difference, I think, the big picture difference in this matchup with Carson Wentz and Lamar. Carson Wentz, obviously a much better passer than Lamar. Much better passer from the pocket. Just a much better passer in general. But Carson Wentz is not going to gash you with his legs like Lamar would. Now, Carson Wentz can still run, and you still have to respect the fact that he can run. But if he's getting into kind of a foot race with John Simon to the edge like Lamar did, he's not getting that angle like Lamar did.
And
he's
also
not running through angles.
You also have to remember, too, this is a franchise quarterback who's very fragile.
Yeah.
And I would imagine the Eagles coaching staff has said, hey, just don't, as much as you can, don't run it.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. So but even with the running backs too, I would say it's the same thing where if you can force them into that situation, that's what the Patriots are probably going to look at and just, it's, they turn it into, you know, kind of Sophie's choice or whatever you want to call it, you know, lesser of two evils. And it's up to the Patriots coaching staff to figure out what the less of those two evils are in this game.
I want to get to one more thing that worries me about this matchup, and then we can bash the Eagles for a little bit.
Yes,
talk about
please.
The ways
please.
That the Patriots can win this game. I think the biggest thing that I look at, other than the scheme and Doug Peterson, because I do think that that scheme does give the Patriots problems. The other thing that I look at is that in the trenches on both sides of the ball, the Eagles have the upper hand.
Yep.
They have a better offensive line and they have a better defensive line. And the matchups, you know, doesn't really matter offensive line versus offensive line, but the Eagles offensive line versus the Patriots D line and vice versa. I think the Eagles have the upper hand in both areas there. I mentioned how fast this offensive line is. This is a great offensive line to watch tape of and just kind of study and figure out what it looks like to be an in-sync five-man unit, what it looks like at its peak, right? They played a really good offensive line last week in Baltimore, or 2 weeks ago, but Baltimore's offensive line, those guys are hulks. Those are just huge guys.
Yeah.
And when you watch them on tape and you see them standing there in front of Lamar, it's just like, it's five huge guys across the board. These guys are athletic, they're lean, they're fast, and they're really, really good at getting out on the move and making combination blocks and getting blocks on the move. That's how they beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, it was in the trenches, right? It was finally in the trenches. Even though Brady put up a ton of points and put up a ton of yards, he was under pressure a lot in that game. It was, you know, a lot of throws under pressure with wide open receivers down the field that helped things out a lot. So I think that the trenches battle. If the Eagles are going to win this game, it's going to be because they're at home.
Yep.
If they have Doug Peterson.
Yep.
And they have the advantage in the trenches.
The counter I would have for that
is... counters.
Yeah. I didn't even mean to do that. You talk about the Eagles blocking in the second or third level, which is a good point. And that's, you know, how you extend plays.
And it's also screens, too. It's not just running the ball. They're a great screen team also.
But I would say, have they faced a second level like this?
No.
Have they faced a second level that can fight through blocks the way that guys like Jamie Collins can?
The question is can the Patriots' defensive line keep those guys clean enough to allow them to make those types of
moves? I like that you said that, because I heard – this was years ago. I forget who described it to me, but – the Patriots at times will have a defensive philosophy where the defensive line essentially acts as an offensive line for the linebackers
that's what Belichick's basis 3-4 is.
Right.
Is fundamentally, and obviously there's wrinkles and there's one gapping out of the 3-4 and some different types of alignments and stuff like that. But fundamentally, the job of the defensive line, Danny Shelton, Lawrence Guy, those guys, is to keep the linebackers clean, and the linebackers are the ones, Jamie Collins, Dante Hightower, those are the guys that are going to make the play.
Right, so I think the emphasis on that, the emphasis of the defensive line, and this is all easier said than done, honestly.
Yeah.
Obviously, but the emphasis of the defensive line holding up at the point of attack and continuing to battle, and I almost wanted, like I almost just said, just because it naturally fits in this thought process, the emphasis of the defensive line finishing their blocks, and air quotes, I think that's a huge. That's huge this week for the Patriots.
Couldn't do it against Baltimore. So right. That was a big difference in that game.
And I think that's huge for them this week. And it's funny, you keep going back and forth to Baltimore. It's almost like, for the college football people, it's like the Patriots are going up against, they played a Big Ten team last week, and they're playing a Big 12 team this week.
Yeah.
They are going from, at least up front, all of the size and muscle and bullying and running the football. And I know Lamar is quick and people wouldn't think of it this way, but that's a smash mouth football team.
Yeah.
The Ravens.
Oh,
they're going from a smash mouth football team to, you know, quick, agile. Right. You mentioned, I know it's not air raid, but it is air raid.
A lot of their thing. I mean, mesh, RPOs, four verts. They have some variations to four verts. It's not always just strictly four. It's air raid.
I'll shout out Taylor Kyles for this, because he put this on Twitter yesterday. He pointed out the Jello concept that they run with the running back on the option routes going right up the field. Like, that's the kind of thing to me, and I say this all the time when teams play the Patriots, and it kind of killed me last week against the Ravens, but I'm going to stick with it because it's worked for 20 years with maybe three or four exceptions. When these teams come in and they have things that they like a specific thing or two or three things that they've hung their hat on that's worked all season.
Yeah.
Generally, it's because they're outsmarting other teams because it's something new. Those are the kind of things the Patriots tend to stop.
Right.
So that's kind of where I'm confident the Patriots in this game is. The Eagles' offense is – a lot of it is just outsmarting the other team.
Yeah.
That's a lot of what it is.
There's also – I think this year, too, in particular, I've noticed that maybe teams – I think Peterson needs to now adapt a little bit.
Right.
Like, I think that it worked. His system works. We know it can sustain success. But a lot of the little wrinkles that they – like, for example, like we're talking about RPOs. We're talking about meshes. We're talking about other air raid concepts. Everybody that plays them now knows that they run that stuff.
Right.
And it's not – it hasn't been quite as explosive, quite as dynamic. And certainly we're going to get to the receivers and all that, their impact on the whole thing, because I think that's a big advantage for the Patriots in this game is those matchups. But it isn't quite as electric as it was their Super Bowl year. It's just not – something is not there, and I think it's actually – I think what is not there is that the league is catching up to it just a little bit, and they don't have Patrick Mahomes.
Right, and so I would say especially – well, not even Mahomes. I would say especially now without DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, they have
and a guy who really was that elite speed threat. You need that in an air raid offense.
Yeah.
You need that elite – right. Your Tyreek Hill. I go back to, you know – all the guys they had at Baylor over the year, like the Katie Cannons, you can even go back to Josh Gordon. That hurts. That is a big loss for them. And I think that his loss, I don't think it's been – maybe it's because it happened a few weeks before they played that he got put on IR. What was that? It was the week before the Baltimore game, right?
Yeah.
I think it's been understated how big of an impact that could potentially have on this game.
Yeah. And just before we talk about some advantage for the Patriots, the defensive line we should talk about the Philly defensive line, because Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, those guys,
Solomon Thomas,
they're fantastic players. And I think the biggest thing that they do is they are a big penetrating line. This is not, we just talked about the Patriots kind of letting that defensive line like eat up blockers and stuff like that. This is the total opposite. This is an upfield, we're going to penetrate gaps. Fletcher Cox is one of the best linemen in the league in a lot of ways. One of the ways that he's really, really good at, though, is that he knows, because he's an interior guy and because he's a dominant interior guy, that they're going to double him. Right. So instead of allowing that double to come to him, he actually just goes right through the double team.
Right.
So he, at the ball is snapped, he'll come see that combination block coming, and he just, boom, right in the middle of the two of them. And it is, he gets off the ball so fast. And Fletcher Cox is one of, I think Brandon Graham is a really good player. I think Brandon Graham is a good player, but not great player. Fletcher Cox is a great player.
Fletcher Cox, he's top one of the, five player in the league what he does.
Yeah.
If it's not for Aaron Donald, he might be the best. I mean,
I think if it wasn't for Aaron Donald, Fletcher Cox's career would be completely
looked at differently.
Like, he might be looked at as a Hall of Famer if he wasn't in the same era as Aaron Donald.
So I will say, and again, I'll give the counterpoint to that, is in a defense like that, and I know the Eagles like to blitz, but that generally puts more coverage assignments on the linebackers.
Yeah.
So that's where a guy like a James White, or even if you can work the matchup and figure out a way to get Julian Edelman on a linebacker in the slot, that's where the Patriots need to look offensively, because against these guys, you have to get the ball out quick.
Yeah.
You do. And when you're getting the ball out quick, you're throwing to your running backs. You're throwing to Julian Edelman. So finding those matchups on linebackers is going to be what the Patriots need to do. This is going to be a, you know, what their ideal drive down the field in this game is Brady, 4 yards, 5 yards, 4 yards, 3 yards, six yards, 5 yards, 4 yards, just bang, bang, bang down the field. So that's where, you know, for that, that's just football. And that's what I love about it. And, you know, when you can get a little more into the X's and O's, which we don't always get to do on the other stuff that we do. Football is rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah.
There is nothing that beats everything else. Right. Yeah. Right. Rock beats scissors. Scissors beats paper. Yeah. Paper beats rock.
Go back to your childhood here.
You know, this beats the RPO. The RPO beats this. And this beats that. And that's what the Patriots are so good at, is in being a game plan team, they can always kind of step to that next level. And this is a big week for that. And because what the Eagles do is so based on their scheme, the Patriots being able to counter by doing things we might not have seen them do this season, is big.
Yeah, it's a fun matchup because of what you just said, for many reasons, but for what you just said, of this is two teams that have been locked into their relative scheme for, even if their coaches have been elsewhere and have come back or whatever the case may be, Doug Peterson's been with Andy Reid for a very long time, and he's kind of been locked in that scheme. Jim Schwartz, as Belichick said, has taken his scheme to four different teams. And then, of course, the Patriots scheme hasn't changed in 20 years.
Nope.
So the systems on both sides of the ball are staying power systems. Those are systems that have been in the NFL for a really long time and have been really successful. Now, talking about some advantages I think the Patriots have, I would just want to say, I think that the Patriots do a great job of overhyping defenses and overhyping opponents. Bill Belichick did a great job of overhyping Jim Schwartz in this Eagles defense, especially on the back end. I think the Patriots have a huge advantage, both schematically, because the Eagles pretty much play the entire game in post safety with one safety in the middle of the field. And that's why in the Super Bowl, they absolutely destroyed them on crossing routes all day long and stuff, you know, just coming over across the middle of the field, whether it's deep overs or drags or whatever the case may be. And they have an advantage because I really do think the Eagles more or less sit in the same stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they do change it up with their pressure packages, but it's really either cover three or cover one man with the safety in the middle of the field. It's not too much different than that. I watched their game, a couple of games, and I think I could count on one hand the amount of time they went split safety coverage.
Yeah.
It's not that. It's not this team. So they have that advantage. The cornerbacks of the Eagles have been a weak spot of that team for a couple of years now.
I mean, they're talking about signing Vernon Hargraves.
Yeah, so Ronald Darby, you know, those guys, Jalen Mills, who gets beat on every single double move that you ever send his way. So get ready for that one. Remember the Super Bowl double move for Chris Hogan. Chris Hogan got wide open against him on a double move. So their secondary is weak. Their back seven is not what it used to be, nor is it anything elite at all. So I do think the Patriots are going to know what they're going to run for the most part defensively, and they're going to have advantages and matchups defensively as well, or offensively against the Eagles' defense.
So this kind of plays into that. It's not totally a schematic thing.
Yeah.
But I think a big big benefit for the Patriots, a big edge for the Patriots is N'Keal Harry.
Yeah.
And how often in, was it week 10?
Yeah.
Right?
10, 11, how, where are we at now?
8 and 1 is 9, 11.
Yeah.
How often in week 11 can you add an entirely new dimension to your offense?
Yeah.
And, you know, they can look at how N'Keal Harry was used in college. They can even go and look at the preseason, but the Eagles don't know. We don't know.
Right.
What N'Keal Harry's role is going to be.
Yeah.
So to have a guy that off the bat is that tough of a matchup, given his combination of size and ability in the open field, and then the Eagles have no idea where he's going and what are you doing? That's a huge advantage to me for the Patriots. That is a huge advantage. And I think we could have him see a huge game because I just don't know if the Eagles will know what to do with him. And I don't know how they would know what to do with him.
I also think that he could be used in the areas of the field where the Eagles are most susceptible to.
Right.
Because I think the ideal role for N'Keal Harry, we've talked about this in a lot of different ways and a lot of different platforms at this point.
Yes.
But I think the ideal role for N'Keal Harry for me is still like a joker move tight end type role where he's playing a lot in the slot. They're moving him all around the formation. They're getting him the ball in space. They're giving him matchups. They're hunting matchups with him. You know, and I hate to mention this name, but I always do come back to Aaron Hernandez with N'Keal because I think that even though he's a little bit smaller than Hernandez,
he
has
the speed though. So much of that was the speed.
He has a lot of speed for a big guy. He's a low 4.5s guy at 6'3".
Hernandez was like low 4. Hernandez was fast.
Hernandez might have been. I think Hernandez was shiftier. And maybe a little bit more explosive in quick areas. But I think that the ideal role, my point is that if you put N'Keal out at X, if you just put him out on the boundary and you put him one-on-one against the corner, NFL corner for 70 snaps in a game, 25 snaps in a game, whatever he ends up playing, he's not going to win the majority of the time in those routes. And really all you're going to be able to get out of him in those situations are back shoulders and jump balls and comeback routes and stuff like that. He's not, I don't know if his route running is there to the point where he's going to be able to separate regularly.
But
did they
draft him and plan on him being a separation guy, or is he here for back shoulders and jump balls?
I think that's got to be one element of him, but if you're going to only throw back shoulders and jump balls to him, his production's not going to be a first round pick.
But if you're only going to throw him that on the outside.
Right.
And then you do all the other stuff when he's on the inside. Right. That's what you're saying. Okay. Right. Yeah. I got you. Yeah.
Yep. So I would move him into the slot. I'd even move him behind the line of scrimmage some and try to throw some swings. I don't know if we're there yet, but I think that that's his ideal role.
Like down the road.
At some point down the road here. Because I think the best advantage the Patriots can give N'Keal Harry is, remember with Hernandez, how often they used to get him matched up on linebackers?
Yeah.
And like just how they would just hunt matchups with him by putting him in the backfield or putting him in the slot or having him more of like an H-back rather than an actual traditional tight end. That's kind of what I would do with N'Keal Harry.
Well, they would run like pistol sets with him.
Yeah.
And I've never seen them on the pistol before. No, and it goes back to kind of what I was saying before with the matchups on the linebackers, and to add in the unpredictability of that, if I'm the Patriots, the first three plays on the field, he's lined up in three different spots.
Right.
In line, slot, outside, backfield, whatever.
Right.
Like, move him around as much as possible. Don't let the Eagles get comfortable with where he is on the field or what he's doing at any point in the game.
Yeah.
And I mean, that should be the plan from going forward, but especially now when there's nothing of it on tape.
I think that should be the plan for his career.
Right. But especially now when there's nothing on tape and they have no idea what to expect, give them multiple, like maybe they're coming in thinking, okay, they're going to use him out of the slot and they're going to run screens to him.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden he's lined up outside and running a post.
Yeah.
And then he's in the backfield. Like, move him around as much as possible, especially early on.
Yeah. I think the biggest, the skills that N'Keal has right off the bat that are impressive from his college tape are his ability to create after the catch with the ball in his hands and his ability to win jump balls. Those are the two things that just when you watch his highlight reel.
Yep.
Don't even have to go back and watch the individual games. Watch his highlight reel. 90% of the plays that he makes are going to be contested catches or he's going to be creating.
Well, and then I think you have to throw in, it's not necessarily a skill, but his size is a huge part of that as well. He's guys as big as him, you know, 10, 15 years ago, they were playing tight end.
Right.
But guys his size don't really play wide receiver anymore.
No.
They don't. They play tight end.
Yeah, what I think he is. I mean, there's another guy on the other side of the ball, and Zach Ertz, who we're going to talk about in a second, who is a jumbo receiver.
Right.
Belichick today called him a jumbo receiver. He said, you know, he doesn't really play that much traditional tight end. He's basically a slot receiver.
Right.
That Zach Ertz is bigger than N'Keal Harry, but that's the type of role that I think that N'Keal Harry would really thrive in, more so than having him just play out on the outside.
Right.
The other advantage I wanted to talk about for the Patriots is involves Zach Ertz, who I think is probably the only player on that offense that scares me at all. And their receivers, Nelson Aguilar, Alshon Jeffrey, their backs, Miles Sanders is a decent pass-catching back.
And he's got a ways to go, though.
And maybe Darren Sproles will kind of, like, come out of retirement in this game.
The corpse of Darren Sproles.
Yeah,
no, I don't want to diss Darren Sproles. There are some guys that hang around this league for so long that you can't help but respect them because it's so cool. You know, you watch Darren Sproles when you're 10, and you get to watch him when you're 20, and he's just a dominant bolt. Like, Devin Hester's one of those guys.
Yeah.
Dante Hall was in the league forever. Like, because I'm a nostalgic person, as you know. I love those guys that hang out for like 15 years and they never hit a dip in their production. So I do love that. I do love Darren Sproles. I do.
Yeah. And I think that Carson Wentz this year is averaging under 7 yards per attempt. This offense has no explosion.
Yeah.
This is not there's.
Even though what was the first thing Bill Belichick said about the Eagles today?
That they make great big plays.
That they are explosive all over the field.
Yeah. Well, that I don't know about.
I think we might be onto something there. I wonder if the first, because Bill Belichick always comes out
the first thing
on
is
Wednesday.
He
right. He always comes out on Wednesday and starts off with a 2-minute tirade on how his opponent is the greatest team ever assembled.
Even the Miami Dolphins.
Right. Two. I've noticed this a couple of times this year where the first or second point he makes, it's actually opposite of the case. Sometimes it's just lip service.
Yeah.
You know, and he's not really making a specific point or he's not touching on something directly, but he'll always bring up one or two certain elements of a team that he says he respects, and I need to go back through now and look at this or pay attention going forward because I thought of it today.
The offense is not explosive.
I wonder if it's he's leaving us breadcrumbs.
The biggest plays that this offense has actually created is probably passes to the backs, and obviously passes to the tight ends too. But it's really a tight ends and backs offense now. Alshon Jeffrey is a shell of himself. He can't move anymore. His career is...
Talk about a tight end.
Yeah, he's basically like, for Patriots fans to like have some perspective, I would say he runs like Josh Gordon was running, you know, when Josh Gordon was here this season.
Yeah.
You know, certainly can still get up the field a little bit. He's got that vertical element to go over the top of the defense and catch jump balls, but he's not running away from anybody. Nelson Aguilar is a drop machine. He fumbles the ball all the time, too. He's a guy that has struggled all year long, too. Mac Hollins is their other receiver. DeSean Jackson's obviously not going to play in this game. They really lack a lot of firepower at receiver, a lot of explosiveness at a receiver. And you watch their games, and even the passes to the tight ends, because, you know, Ertz is a great, great route runner and an awesome tight end. I would say that Ertz is probably, you know, he doesn't block very much, but in terms of receiving and route running, it's probably Ertz and Kelsey, and that's it at that position. But at the same time, maybe George Kittle can't, you know, diss George Kittle at all. But at the same time, if you watch their tape, every single catch that they have is in a phone booth. There's guys draped on people. It's in a contested catch situation. They got guys all over them, and they're boxing people out, and they're battling at the catch point for balls. There's not a ton of open space. And some of that's definitely the scheme, and I think Doug Peterson in Philly certainly has taken some blame for this, the fact that he's not scheming open guys like he was maybe, you know, the Super Bowl year or even last year at points. But I think a lot of it is the regression of those skill players. So I think the Patriots have a huge advantage, their secondary, their cover guys versus these Eagle receivers. I think there's a very good chance that the Patriots could actually dominate that matchup. And I do think that I wonder the way, especially that Bill Belichick talked about Ertz here today, if they actually put Gilmore on Ertz some in this game, because Alshon Jeffrey's not the same.
Well, Gilmore's been saying all year, right? He wants to cover tight ends, and
he says it's easy. He thinks it's easy to cover tight ends because they don't run as fast as receivers.
He's not wrong.
So they're much slower. He said last year after the AFC Championship game that covering Kelsey was easier than covering Sammy Watkins because he didn't have to run. You know, and Sammy Watkins obviously a big vertical guy too, so he wasn't just running. He was running 60 yards down the field doing wind sprints.
Yeah.
And he was like, I got onto Kelsey, and I was like, this is easy. So I think that Ertz is obviously their engine. He's the number one guy that you got to take out. I don't think Alshon Jeffrey is the same guy. I think you could put J.C. Jackson on Alshon Jeffrey. I think you could put Jason McCourty on Alshon Jeffrey, and they could probably take him out of the game. It's not like you're putting Eric Rowe on Alshon Jeffrey this time.
So I wonder if you then you switch it, and if you're going to put the corner on the tight end who's more like a wide receiver, can you put the safety on the wide receiver who's more like a tight end?
Maybe. I mean,
Because let's be honest.
Ertz is still a tight end body, though, right?
Right.
He just runs routes mostly out of the
but
slot.
But I don't so much mean...
He runs more routes out of the slot than any tight end.
But I don't so much mean to take that away from Gilmore, although that would be... Gilmore does tend to struggle out of the slot, so that would be the red flag. Yeah. But I'm saying, could you throw, maybe with safety help, Patrick Chung on Alshon Jeffrey?
I mean, you could if you wanted to. I don't know why you would.
But... Well, because then that saves you J.C. Jackson or Jason. Because like you said, the explosive players are going to the running backs.
Yeah.
If you can throw a corner on the running back, that limits you know, that possibility for a big play. By the way, I did just in my email just now get Bill Belichick's transcript. The first specific trait he gets, he goes, blah, blah, blah. The Eagles are a great team. They're built well. They do a tremendous job all three phases. All three phases. He said that twice. Then he says, they're solid all the way around. A very explosive team.
Yeah.
The first adjective he gives that's not a synonym for great is explosive.
Okay, well, the stats, the numbers, the tape, nothing backs that up.
I think we
a guy that's averaging 6.8 yards per attempt in Carson Wentz is not running an explosive offense.
We may have discovered Bill Belichick's tell here.
Yeah, maybe we did.
This is what happens when you have me on your podcast.
Yeah, you're right. We get to the bottom of things. But yeah, I really do think that this is... I think that this could turn into a game where the Patriots really force the Eagles to only be able to run the football and become very one-dimensional. And
then if you get ahead, if you get a lead early and get ahead, then that's how games turn into blowouts.
In a lot of ways, it's kind of the same script that they had against Cleveland, where they played a lot of nickel and dime against Cleveland. They got run over by Nick Chubb in the monsoon. But at the same time, they limited Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry and Antonio Callaway and all those guys to below average days across the board. And they kept, Cleveland off the scoreboard, and they won the game easily.
Even if you're allowing those running yards, right? And the Browns game is a great example of this. You have a young back in Miles Saunders. Yeah. You have Jordan Howard, who doesn't have the worst
ball. Jordan Howard is the best back on the team. Miles Sanders had a horrible rookie year in terms of just watching the team.
Right.
They're averaging the same yards per carry, actually identical. I think they're both at 4.2 or 4.3.
Yeah.
But Miles Sanders is one of those. If Miles Sanders was running in New England, he'd be benched the way that he makes decisions.
So my point being, though, even if you're allowing those big gains, and Cleveland's a perfect example of this, you got a young back, you got a guy that doesn't have the worst ball security, but doesn't have the best ball security in Jordan Howard.
Yeah.
If you're forcing turnovers, it doesn't matter. The great secret that Bill Belichick unlocked for all of us when it comes to defensive football in the NFL is that yards actually really don't matter.
Yeah.
It's points that matter. The whole yards per game number, ranking teams by yards per game, and this goes for offense and defense, is irrelevant. Because if you're allowing a team to go 99 yards on every drive, and then on every drive you force a fumble at the goal line, you get the ball back, that's 16 shutouts.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn good. It's not going to be fun. It doesn't look good on paper, but you're not allowing any points. Now, that's obviously hyperbole to prove my point, but I'm not too worried if the Patriots get run over.
Yeah.
As long as they're getting the stops in the red zone, as long as they're forcing turnovers, run for 300 yards. The hell do they care?
Yeah.
If you run for 350 yards on them, if you put up 700 total yards, and you put up 3 points, that, to me, is probably Bill Belichick's ideal day, because he won the ball game, but he still has a ton to critique his defense on throughout the week.
Right.
So, no, obviously they don't want to give up a bunch of yards. The less yards you give up, the better. But this Eagles team does strike me as a team that could be very, what's the word I'm looking for? They could succumb easily to bend, don't break.
Yeah.
This is a team that can put up a lot of yards, but are they going to put up the points to go with those yards?
Yeah. I think that that's really the way to stop this Eagles offense, to me, is to really kind of not invite the run, because I don't really like that kind of thinking necessarily, unless you're playing somebody like Peyton Manning.
Right.
Where we're just going to invite the run. And
Edgerton and James, go for it.
Right.
No, I get what you're saying. Not invite the run, but... take away the pass.
Just live with it.
Right, right.
Live with it, because I think that honestly,
well,
the only way you lose to, and I have this argument with Trags all the time about the running game, the only way that you lose is if the game goes the exact way that it went for Baltimore.
Right.
Where they run it all over you in multiple ways, with the quarterback, with the running back, and then they become unpredictable. So the defense is on their heels, and when they do actually go to the air, they can't stop that either, because they're trying to load up against the run.
And you have to get a great performance from your defense,
right,
too, if
you
want to do that.
You have to have a good performance to hold you to them to 20, force some turnovers on the defensive side of the ball, score on the defensive side of the ball. You need a lot of things to go right for you if you're just going to beat the Patriots running the football. It did for Baltimore, but I don't know if that's going to be
successful. That's one team in the last how many years. Hey, I hate to keep going back to these Bill Belichick cliches, but I will hear again, because you talk about you don't want to give up the run, right, and let them take it. But what's the Patriots' umbrella defensive philosophy?
Yeah.
Take away what the other team does best and make them beat you with the secondary options.
Right.
And the run is the secondary option for the Eagles. So if you take away the pass, you've accomplished your game plan. And guess what? The Patriots' game plan, 75% of the time, works.
Yeah.
It's more than any other team in the last 20 years. So you've got to feel confident, if you're the Patriots, that if you take away the pass and force the Eagles to run, you're going to have a good shot. You know, you got to take care of business on the other side of the ball, too. The other two sides of the ball, offense and special teams. But if you take away the pass, you got to feel you're going to be in a spot to win this football game, even on the road, even in a tough environment, even against a good team.
Are you picking the Patriots?
Yeah.
Sounds like you're picking the Patriots.
Yeah, you know what? I think that they're coming off, even beyond all that, they're coming off a bye, which always helps. You know, I think that they are pissed off about Baltimore. They're coming off a loss. And it's a revenge game for the Super Bowl. I think those three things. I'm actually picking the Patriots pick. I think they have a point to make. I think they've heard, and I said this before the Baltimore game. I said, it's not the worst thing in the world if they lose this game and they have to sit on a rough loss to a team they know they're better than for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That might be exactly what this team needs after hearing about how good they are for 8 straight weeks. I think this team, Bill Belichick, he might have had 98.5 on in there in the locker room.
Yeah.
He may have had First Take playing in the background in the weight room. I know they say they shut out the media, they don't listen. I think Bill Belichick said, they don't listen when Bill doesn't want them to listen. These last 2 weeks, I think Bill's wanted them to listen. I think they've heard it. I think you're going to see an angry football team on the field Sunday in Philly. So I'm actually picking, I don't have my score yet, but I'm picking the Patriots big. I am.
I like it. I think the three things that, just to wrap it up, that I would say that are keys for the Patriots in this game. I think the number one thing is defensively tight ends and backs. That's how the Eagles are going to try to win this game, is through the tight ends and the running backs and being able to really pass the ball. We didn't even mention the 12 personnel stuff, which is a big part of this game, too. The Eagles run more 2 tight end sets. They bring Dallas Goedert into the game with Zach Ertz, and they combine those two. They're interchangeable. They move them all around the formation.
You still disappointed the pass in draft Goddard?
I'm a little disappointed the pass in draft Goddard, but I'm over it.
No, that's right. I'm just asking, because we talked about it last week with Mark Andrews. So
Yeah, a little bit. I would rather have Andrews.
I mean, yeah. For sure. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, a little bit. The other thing is that I will say, I think what you mentioned it actually earlier, is that you can very much dink and dunk against this Eagles defense.
Yep.
There's going to be holes against this Eagles
defense.
Not that
there's anything wrong with that.
No.
Twitter. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
There's definitely going to be holes in this Eagles defense. So I think that you're going to have the ability to, I think you can do that, right?
Yep.
The third thing is that this time around, you got to be ready for all of Doug Peterson's little tricks. All of them are on tape now. They're in the, he hasn't really diversified the scheme all that much. The Wentz factor is a factor, right? He's a better player than Nick Foles. Foles had a great run, a great Super Bowl, not trying to take anything away from him. But sustainability-wise, Carson Wentz was obviously the right way to go. Wentz has not been the problem with his offense, honestly. His tape actually looks pretty good. He makes good decisions within the scheme. The ball placement's pretty solid. Obviously got great arm strength, very athletic, and can move and can scramble if you let him.
Yeah.
So all those things are the keys for the Patriots. I have the Patriots winning probably around 27-21. I think it's going to be a little bit closer than you do, but I do think the Patriots are going to win this game.
Can I add one more key?
Yeah.
Can we not bench any corners or anybody? Just play everybody if they're healthy, please. Please.
Next week, I can't wait. Already, I can't wait for our debates about Dak Prescott, because I know I'm definitely higher on Dak Prescott.
Oh, I had some hot takes about Dak Prescott yesterday. You weren't around.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it later. All right. Yeah, we're going to need to
see.
If I was Jerry Jones, Dak Prescott's not on the Cowboys next year. I'm just saying. Hey, not at $35 million.
Did you see Dak's game on Sunday? He was amazing.
We'll talk about this.
Great quarterback.
We'll talk
game.
About this next. He's not. I actually think Dak's a very good player. I think the Cowboys are the one team in the last 10 years in the NFL where you could remove the quarterback and they'd still be a great team.
Wow.
I think they've, and it's by accident.
Besides the Patriots, or not including the Patriots.
They're not who they are if you remove the quarterback.
Sure.
I think the Cowboys, and this is an accident. I'm not trying to give Jerry Jones any credit. I think he did this by accident.
Yeah.
But they've built this roster where you can replace the quarterback with a guy who's league average And I think their record stays the same.
All right. Well, I guess we might have to have Alex back on the podcast at least for a little bit next week to talk about Dak Prescott, because just like Lamar and a lot of – we disagree on a lot of quarterbacks, honestly, around the NFL.
Yeah.
And Trax thinks they all suck. Trags texts me every single weekend about Mr. Trags, you know, the 80s, right. I understand.
Well,
Trags,
no, let me see.
But it was better.
Here's the thing about quarterbacks. I don't want to run on too much here, but I feel like I need to defend myself on this.
Okay.
There are quarterbacks who, for a year, year and a half, 2 years, are very good.
Sure.
And I'm actually not even going to put Dak in this category. This is more about Lamar. This is about a guy like Patrick Mahomes, right? But if you look in the last 10, 15 years in the NFL, every 2 to 3 years, we happen to have it back-to-back years this year and last year, but every 2 to 3 years, a quarterback comes along who is going to change the game and revolutionize the sport. It was Jackson, it was Mahomes, it was Luck, it was Griffin.
I think Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time, but he's a conventional quarterback, right?
So Tom Brady, I said,
and these Patriots fans don't like when the new guy, Lamar Jackson, can run.
But here's the thing, how many of those guys have staying power? What is Robert Griffin III doing right now? What is Andrew Luck doing right now?
Those guys all get hurt. So that's going to be the question for Lamar and Patrick Mahomes, too, in some degree. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, I think, is a different animal because of how good of a passer he is. But
Patrick Mahomes, of any of them, I think, has some staying power. It's not even about them getting
Patrick
hurt.
Patrick Mahomes won an MVP, so I think he's got some staying power.
Lamar
White might win the MVP.
Peyton Hill's on the cover of Madden. Peyton Hill is people wanted to be the offensive player of the year that year.
Yeah.
It's not just quarterbacks. Gimmicks
don't matter.
Gimmicks don't have staying power in the NFL. They don't. So I will give Lamar Jackson the credit that he is winning football games this season, doing things other people haven't done. How much staying power does that have?
I don't think very much. I don't think that their offense is a gimmick. I think they're sound schematically. I really do. They have some veer elements. They have some wing T elements. They have some new kind of RPO, more new age type stuff. I think that their offense and their scheme and their fundamentals are sustainable. The question is ultimately going to be, can they keep Lamar healthy, and can Lamar improve a little bit as a passer incrementally to just make them a little bit more
But they have to be able to – it goes back to something we talked about earlier, and I know we need to wrap this up. But you even said the Eagles, when they came out with the RPOs 2 years ago, it was new, it was fresh, nobody knew what to do with it. 2 years later, they haven't really refreshed it. They're still running the same stuff, and they're struggling because teams know what to expect. You're seeing that with the Chiefs this year. Last year, it was all new. Now it's not. The question, all these innovations are great, but the question is, once there's 2-3 years of them on tape, and teams have seen them, and they've figured out the initial way to stop them, can you adjust from them enough to keep them effective and keep your team as a winning team, or do you just have to abandon them altogether, like the Wildcat, right? There was no way to adjust the Wildcat once the initial adjustments were made to keep it relevant. It just went away, right?
Yep.
Can you do that with an RPO offense? Is there a way to adjust it enough and keep it fresh week after week when it's on tape to keep it relevant in a winning system in the NFL, or did it have its time? There's now an answer to the question, and it's gone. And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But what I do know is that in 20 years of watching football, generally these fads are just that. They're fads. They go away. They're tried and true things that work. There may be 5 quarterbacks in the league right now that have proven to have actual staying power, and they all run essentially the same system.
Yeah.
So I'm relatively young. I'm 25 years old. I haven't really seen many new systems come in and have staying power in the NFL. They come and go outside of West Coast, which has been there.
I think the biggest thing about the Chiefs and the Eagles and these RPO systems is that 80% of it's just standard West Coast, right? More or less. And it's only 20 or 25% of the offense that's RPO.
But it's that 20 to 25% that's making them Super Bowl contenders.
That's making it unique.
If the Chiefs were just a West Coast team, they didn't run the RPO stuff.
Yeah.
Does Patrick Mahomes win MVP last year?
That's
what I'm saying.
Question.
It's like it goes.
They don't win. He doesn't win MVP with the air raid elements. He doesn't win MVP without RPO, and he doesn't win the MVP without vertical passing concepts. Because the West Coast at its basis is a short passing.
But that's what I'm saying.
It's designed to be like an
extension. This is a stupid.
Bill Walsh,
A stupid analogy, but I feel like it's the best way to prove my point here.
Yeah.
In biology, right?
Yeah.
They say that, what is it? It's human beings and I think it's octopuses, right? It's 99.6%.
Always with your analogies.
No, but hang on. I forget the exact animal. I think it's octopus. human beings and octopus, 99.6% of the DNA is identical.
Yeah.
The only difference between human DNA and octopus DNA is 0.4%.
Wow.
But that 0.4% is the whole difference,
yeah,
right? Between us having eight legs and being able and not being able to talk.
It'd be pretty cool to have eight legs.
I guess so. I mean, be a hell of a football player. What I am saying is, when we get Mahomes, when you get Lamar Jackson, if you take that 25% out of the playbook, are they still the dynamic playmakers they are, or are they just another quarterback? And then it falls on the coach, and the coaching staff are, okay, you can't keep that 25%, you can't keep running the same year after year after year. That's just not how it works. Can you adjust it to keep these guys and play to their strengths and keep them elite, or do you have to get rid of it altogether because it's not effective anymore, and then once you get rid of it, well, suddenly how does Patrick Mahomes look? Suddenly how does Carson Wentz look? Suddenly how does Nick Foles look, right? That's the question I have, and that's why I'm not willing to anoint a guy like Patrick Mahomes or a guy like Lamar Jackson or a guy like Carson Wentz or any of these guys just yet, because I need to see what they can do once they've already shown me everything they can do. And once that's all out there, can they still continue? It's Tom Brady's answers to the test. Can they still continue to dominate when the 11 guys lined up on the other side of the ball know exactly what they're going to do? Those are the great ones. The Bradys, the Rodgers, the Brees, the other guys on the guys on the other side of the field, they know exactly what's about to happen, and they still can't stop it. What makes Mahomes and Jackson and these guys so effective is the defense doesn't know what's going to happen. When they do know what's going to happen, and that day will come for every quarterback, that day comes, can these guys still be the dynamic playmakers they are now? That is the argument I'm trying to make against Jackson, against Wentz, against
Dak Prescott,
Goff. I would throw Jared Goff in that category.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing that this year,
yeah,
is that teams now know what's coming and he can't adjust. That is ultimately the root of my problem with these new age quarterbacks.
The best innovators, and I think that when we often talk about NFL innovators, talk about Sean McVay, we talk about Andy Reid, maybe Sean Payton. Belichick doesn't get mentioned enough as a true innovator of the game. The best thing about Bill Belichick is that his innovation is always staying ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
His innovation is not that it's a set in stone scheme. It's not the RPO. It's not a system like Sean McVay's. His innovation is that he is constantly adapting both to opponent and to personnel that's on his current team. When he has two really good tight ends in Gronk and Hernandez, he runs the offense through two really good tight ends.
When he wants to wipe out the fullback position, he wipes it out. When he wants to bring it back after everybody's gotten rid of theirs, he brings it back.
Right. That's the innovation of Bill Belichick, and that's what has allowed him to sustain success for 20 years, is that he's always constantly ahead of the curve and he's constantly changing himself, and he's never too married to one idea. So all these other coaches, I agree with you in the basis of what you're saying. I don't necessarily agree with you on the players, but I agree with your big picture point that Sean McVay, Doug Peterson, all these coaches.
So the difference is I'm making about the quarterbacks, you're making about the coaches.
Because it is about the innovators in my mind. All those guys need to continue to adapt. McVay is a big one. We're really going long now. But McVay, we do this all the time, don't we?
Yeah.
McVay's scheme, McVay's system, the Patriots and a couple of other teams, Chicago, Detroit, down the stretch run last year, really started to pick up on ways to stop the wide zone and stop what McVay was doing with the wide zone, the misdirection, the play action, right? And this year, the offense has stunk. In relative
because
terms.
The 11 guys on the defensive side of the football know what's coming, and they're ready for it.
Yep.
And Jared Goff is not good enough to adjust for that. So all I'm saying is pick any young quarterback in the game, even the guys I love, even the young quarterbacks I think are great. My general rule of thumb is I wait 3 years before I judge a quarterback.
Yeah.
I can say they're good in the moment, but I wait 3 years before I say if quarterback's good or not. Give me any quarterback who's under 3 years, and I will tell you, all right, well, let's wait. Let's see what happens when the guys on the other side of football know what he's doing. If he can see Kyler.
Yeah.
Kyler, right? A lot of Kyler right now is unpredictability, and he's killing it.
Yeah.
But let's see what happens when those guys know what he's about to do.
Cliff Kingsbury's
and if he can still adjust.
Some freaky formations he's running on that offensive side of the ball. He had two running.
Right.
He had three across. He had Kyler, running back.
Right. And actually, if you remember, the Patriots broke that out for one play in the opener. I'll go to that. And that's new, and the defense can't necessarily adjust to that, and they're confused. And it
I don't
gives...
even know if it's got any schematic advantages. Somebody smarter than me could maybe tell me.
I
don't even know if it does. Just looks cool.
The element of surprise itself is an advantage. And it's something new, and you haven't seen it. And that in its own, you might overthink it, right?
Yeah.
Once that element of surprise is worn off, and the new car smell is gone,
yeah,
right,
Rams are a great example.
Let's see what they can do. I feel like the Rams are really where I need to stake this argument.
Yeah, right now, that because McVay's running the same stuff he ran last year, and everybody's caught up to it, and it's not been as effective. And Goff is obviously, his career is kind of torpedoing a little bit, and you know, we'll see what happens. But we got to wrap it up.
One more.
Yeah, you got one more.
Any trick play? I had a football coach tell me this once. Any trick play will work once.
Yeah.
A good play is a play that works more than once.
Right.
Right.
The fact
that the Philly specials work so many times to me in college and the NFL blows my mind, because the second you see the quarterback go stand behind the right tackle, you know it's coming.
Yeah.
Just defend it. Mm. But my point being, trick plays work because you're not expecting them. They get in your head.
Yeah.
But the good tried and true stuff works because even if you know it's coming, you still can't stop it. So that's what I want to see. That's what I want to see from some of these young quarterbacks, young coaches, the young innovators, whatever you want to call it.
Well, we're going to be debating all of this all week next week on clnsmedia.com, on the CLNS Media YouTube page. Be sure to check out my Patriots game plan on Friday as well about this Eagles matchup, which I think is a pretty good one that we can kind of dig our teeth into. We obviously just did for over an hour, so it's a good one. Be sure to follow Alex at RealAlexBarth on Twitter. Read his stuff. Listen to his stuff. It's always great. Always great to have him on the show as well. We finally got this done. And Adam will hopefully be back next week, and we'll be looking at the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott, and talk a lot about that offense too, and things that Dallas can do. And I think that the odds that Jason Garrett comes in here with a game plan that can beat the Patriots is probably about 10%, maybe less than that. But it's still going to be a fun matchup. There's still plenty of guys to talk about. And I will obviously recap this game against the Eagles as well. But until next time, signing off for Alex Barth, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.